morning and good afternoon to everyone, and welcome to our Q4 conference call. With us today are Marc Schneider and Stephan Sturm. Marc will now start with a general business update, and Stephan will cover the financials in more detail, followed by a Q&A session. After the call, a replay and the transcript will be available on our website. The forward-looking statement and the disclaimer are on page two of the presentation. Without any further ado, let me hand over to Marc.
Thank you, Markus, and a warm welcome to our conference call participants today. As always, we appreciate your interest in our company. Today, we are reporting a strong fourth quarter in fiscal year 2015. We set new records for sales and earnings for Fresenius. We saw double-digit growth rates in our group's key financial parameters and enormous consistency in our growth at a time of major economic turbulence. With our 2015 net income levels, we have achieved our 2017 midterm income target 2 years ahead of schedule. As a result, we have updated our growth and profitability expectations and will share with you a new 2019 target in this call. So we have a year of significant success behind us, and we are entering 2016 with lots of momentum. Looking ahead, our midterm guidance should give you confidence regarding our growth prospects for the years to come. Markus has pointed out the safe harbor language to you, so let's move right to page three, which summarizes our financial results for the fourth quarter and the full year 2015. We recorded sales of 27,626,000,000 euros, EBIT of 3,958,000,000 euros, and net income of 1,423,000,000 euros. Currency certainly provided a major tailwind in 2015, but please note our solidly double-digit constant currency growth rates for EBIT and net income in both the full year and the fourth quarter. Based on the significant growth in net income and applying our earnings-linked dividend policy, we will be proposing to our supervisory board a dividend increase of 25%, which translates into 55 euro cents per share. This will mark our 23rd consecutive dividend increase and, as you can see from the chart, our compounded annual dividend growth rate since 1993 has been 16%. While we are excited to have such a consistent dividend growth history, the picture gets even better when you look at total shareholder returns. The right side of page four shows you our TSR for the 10-year period from the end of 2005 through the end of 2015. As you can see, we outperformed the DAX by a factor of more than 2 over this 10-year period. No matter whether you look at 10 years or other time spans, be they longer or shorter, the picture does not change very much. Our TSRs compare very favorably to major benchmark index developments such as the DAX, the S&P 500, or the MSCI World Healthcare Index. Page 5 shows the financial results by business segment. As in previous quarters, we are quite reassured by the enormous level of consistency in our growth rates across the board. While Kabi sales and earnings growth clearly stand out, there were no major disappointments across the board, and that is important in this turbulent time. Please note that Helios marked the 10th consecutive year of double-digit EBIT growth with a solid 16% EBIT increase in 2015. Before taking a more detailed look at Kabi, Helios, and Vamed, a brief word on Fresenius Medical Care. I think the company has done a remarkable job reviving growth and profitability at a turbulent time. Fresenius Medical Care is poised for significant net income growth in 2016 based on continued cost optimization and solid organic sales growth. The recent agreement in principle to settle the Cranoflo litigation puts this legal matter behind us and provides financial clarity. Let's move to page 6 and a more detailed review of Fresenius Kabi. Clearly, the North American market stands out since it combined significant growth in 2015 with above-average operating margins. We told you in late October last year that 2015 will be a tough comp and that we expected Kabi North America 2016 EBIT to be roughly flat compared to 2015 levels. From what we know today, we can confirm that statement. For good order, this is before some additional research and development expenses, which we will be facing in the U.S. following the acquisition of Becton Dickinson's prefilled syringe IV drug business. Our Kabi U.S. outlook assumes a gradual further easing of the U.S. IV drug shortages and increased competition on some of our major molecules. If either process gets delayed, we will see an upside to our expectations this year. I would also like to confirm that we are expecting vigorous IV drug launch activity this year and in 2017, with a number of launches in both years near the top end of our 6 to 10 products target range. In 2016, we anticipate that our approvals will be rather backloaded. For emerging markets, we expect mid to high single-digit organic sales growth, so no major change from 2015. We expect a recovery regarding organic growth rates in Asia-Pacific outside of China. For China itself, it remains to be seen how the new province-by-province tender system will influence market dynamics. We expect continued double-digit volume growth in this market, but for now, as a precaution, assume mid to high single-digit sales growth until we have a better sense of potential price reductions. For Europe, we expect low to mid-single-digit organic sales growth, so no major change from the year 2015. Let's turn to page 7 and Helios. The key message is that we are essentially done with our massive two-year integration project regarding the Rhön hospitals. This integration is a significant success. We delivered it on target, on time, and, regarding the one-time costs involved, significantly under budget. With the integration behind us, we're now eager to focus on future growth. Organic sales growth has recovered somewhat in the fourth quarter, and we expect our usual 3 to 5% organic sales growth rate for the year 2016. We have started to ramp up marketing activities for our hospital network and supplemental insurance project, and as of January 31st, 2016, have more than 5,000 plus cards in circulation. Last but not least, I would like to point your attention to the recent hospital privatization of a 500-bed facility in North Rhine-Westphalia, which we announced earlier this week. German cities and counties continue to trust us as a long-term partner to take over their hospitals and implement significant improvements. This particular privatization project is located in one of our core regions and will involve the construction of a new hospital building as a major part of our investment. Let's turn to page 8 and Fresenius Vamed. Record Q4 2015 order intake and order backlog give us confidence when it comes to sales development in 2016 and beyond. In addition, we plan to enter more than 10 new country markets, mostly in emerging and developing countries this year. As you can see from the bottom of the page, we have been successful over the years in expanding our service business, which continues to be less cyclical and higher margin. From a two-thirds projects, one-third services split in 2011, we essentially grew the service business to a 50-50 split in 2015. And that, for the avoidance of doubt, while Vamed's project business showed very healthy growth. Before turning it over to Stefan, let's take a look at page 9 and our new midterm growth targets. It was important to us to give you a new midterm outlook after hitting the old midterm net income goal 2 years ahead of time. Based on what we know today, we are targeting 36 to 40 billion euros in sales and 2 billion to 2 billion 250 million euros in net income by 2019. These targets assume a comparable exchange rate regime to what we have today. Revenue and earnings contributions from small and mid-sized acquisitions are included. Large acquisitions, in particular deals above 1 billion euros in size, will be reflected in adjusted targets if and when they materialize. Please note that there is a significant aspiration level built into these new targets. In sales, for example, the top half of this range assumes that we will have doubled the company in 7 years by the year 2019, which is no small feat for a company our size. Regarding net income, the new target assumes at the midpoint a compounded annual growth rate of 10.5%, which compares very favorably to our previous midterm target, where the implied compounded annual growth rate was only 8.4%. These targets should underscore our key message to you, and that is that Fresenius continues to be a reliable growth company, even in turbulent times. Defensive growth, with a particular emphasis on growth, is our hallmark, and we intend to shine with that for years to come. With that, let me hand it over to Stefan.
Thank you, Mark. Good afternoon, good morning, a warm welcome to everybody. You heard it from Mark, a very strong Q4 concluded an exceptional 2015. My personal Q4 highlight is the cash flow development, but before we'll come to that, let's take a look at the group P&L on slide 11. And there I'll focus on our Q4 performance. Sales of 7.3 billion euros, clearly ahead of the prior quarters. Reported growth of 11% includes a positive currency effect of 6 percentage points, down as expected from the 9 points in Q3. Hardly any acquisition contribution left within the 5% constant currency growth, also as expected. So a healthy organic growth of 5% in that fourth quarter, where Kabi, yet again, stood out with an excellent 8%. For the full year, constant currency growth of 9% is well within our guidance range, plus 10 percentage points from currency translation, in line with our estimate. Q4 EBIT of 1.11 billion is up 10% year over year at constant currency. Kabi up an outstanding 26%. And an otherwise healthy growth at FMC, mitigated by the impact of the GranuFlow settlement. Net interest was 137 million euros in Q4, down from the 146 in the third quarter. We saw strong delevering on the back of healthy cash flow generation and were helped by an FMC one-timer. I'm sure Mike will provide some background on that later. For the full year 2015, we came in at 613 million euros. That's up 11 million year on year. Just 11 million. So our various refinancing activities almost offset 60 million euros of currency translation impact. For 2016, based on current exchange and interest rates, we aim at a range of 580 to 600 million euros. The group tax rate reached 28.8% in the fourth quarter, for 29.4% in the full year. That's basically in line with our expectations. For 2016, I'd assume a slightly lower tax rate, likely below 29%. Net income came in at 414 million euros in Q4, up 24% at constant currency. And that took full year growth to 21%, the midpoint of our 20 to 22% guidance range. Excluding FMC's Graniflow settlement, we'd be at the top end. And given a 10 percentage point currency tailwind, reported growth reached a mighty 31%. 1.42 billion euros of net income, so we've reached our 2017 target 2 years ahead of plan. With that, let's move over to Kabi on slide 12. Total EBIT at the bottom of the page was 317 million euros in Q4. That's up 26% year over year at constant currency, taking the full year growth rate to 21%, to the upper half of our guidance range. Let's take a look at Kabi's regions. The decline in Europe, top of the slide, I'm not worried about. It's mainly driven by the lower contract manufacturing volumes I had alluded to in our Q2 and Q3 calls, a bit of ruble devaluation, as well as the fourth quarter of last year being a particularly tough comp. Full year EBIT growth of 2% is a much better proxy for what to expect in 2016. North America saw the typical margin decline in the fourth quarter, but yet another outstanding 40% reported growth, or 43% in the full year. That's what I call a tough comp. Q4 EBIT growth in the emerging markets of 51% is great, but obviously no proxy for 2016. Yes, underlying performance has improved, for instance, in Asia ex-China, where we see our restructuring initiatives pay off. And we've also made further progress in China, where we won some of the delayed tenders I had alluded to in prior quarters. But mind you, reported growth is inflated by a couple of one-time burdens that we had in the fourth quarter of 2014. Corporate and R&D was minus 60 million euros in Q4, a sequential decrease, as expected, taking the full year to minus 275 million euros. For 2016, I'd expect a moderate increase, mainly related to higher R&D and IT project expenses. Now over to Helios on slide 13, where sales reached 1.41 billion euros in Q4, a nice pickup of organic sales growth. 4% in Q4, not unexpected, but valuable given a tough comp with 5% in the fourth quarter of 2014. So we're headed in the right direction. Total EBIT at the bottom of the page came in at 168 million euros, slightly up sequentially. Q4 margin now at 11.9%, taking the margin for the full year to 11.5, plus one full point year over year. Major progress. A few comments on the hospital development plan that you'll find in the appendix, slide 31. As a whole, it continues to work despite the raised hurdle rates. Secondly, quite a few hospitals don't make it over those raised hurdles yet. The ratio of out to underperformers has improved, though. Thirdly, the Rhön hospitals are now displayed in the five-year cluster with a 10% margin hurdle. Not all of them got there last year, but the vast majority of them showed a considerable year-over-year improvement. Lastly, the early columns are now pretty empty. That's a reflection of our focus on integrating their own hospitals rather than privatizations recently. So the development plan can't meet its original objective. We'll therefore spare you that detail for now, but hope to be back once we can properly fill the early columns. Let's move on to cash flow on slide 14, where in my mind we had a truly exceptional fourth quarter. Group operating cash flow of almost 1.2 billion euros, bottom left, corresponds to a margin of 16.2%. And I'll focus on margins here in order to neutralize the effect of euro weakness. So more than 20% margin at Kabi, above 16% at Helios. Just an outstanding performance across the board. And that took the full year margin to a very strong 12%. Deduct group capex of 5.2%. You find that in the middle column. And you'll arrive at free cash flow, bottom right, of 6.8%. 6.8% of a substantially increased top line, and which, to a large degree, we were able to apply to our net debt position with a meaningful effect on our leverage. Let's look at that on slide 15. We were at 3.24 times at year-end 2014, given the debt-financed acquisition of the Rhön hospitals, and delevered by almost 60 basis points over the course of last year, by both growing EBITDA while cutting net debt. Adjusted for dollar strength, net debt is down by around 1.3 billion euros year over year. That is masked, however, by an around 800 million euro increase from currency translation. So for year-end 2016, given ongoing EBITDA growth and cash flow generation, I'd expect leverage of around 2.5 times. And as that marks the bottom end of our target range, let me reconfirm our commitment to balance sheet efficiency. Rest assured, we'll find ways to keep it lean and trim. Let's conclude with our guidance on slide 16 and 17. Kabi's organic sales growth first, where we project a growth rate in the low single digits for 2016 after an outstanding 8% last year. You heard the regional contributions. Low to mid single digit organic growth for Europe, mid to high single digits for the emerging markets, coupled with a broadly flat development for North America, given our expectation that IV drug shortages will continue to ease and that some of our high market shares will normalize. Also, do bear in mind the 16% organic growth in North America last year, a tough comp. So in a year when roughly a third of Kabi, for good reason, isn't expected to grow, we can't expect Kabi as a whole to reach our 5 to 8% target range. What does that mean for EBIT? You saw the more than 40% EBIT growth of Kabi's North American region last year. So I believe that us reconfirming our expectation to roughly maintain that basis, like for like, should be viewed as a positive. In particular, as that 2015 base is now higher than estimated at the time we initially made that statement, and given the nature of our assumptions. The one caveat, though, is that this roughly flat statement applies to an unchanged scope in North America. That means it does not capture the 2016 effect of Kabi acquiring Becton Dickinson's pre-filled syringe business. And whilst that transaction is strategically important, it is initially dilutive to earnings. The regions outside North America contributed broadly one-third to Kabi's total EBIT last year. It's tough, then, to pull Kabi as a whole into the positive. In particular, as we are cautious on potential price effects of the newly introduced tender rules in China, there we just don't have a reliable basis yet. Plus, as I mentioned, as we're planning on a somewhat higher spending level for R&D and IT projects. So for Kabi's total EBIT, we believe we can roughly match last year's level. Adjusted for currency and, for the avoidance of doubt, including the effects of the Becton Dickinson acquisition. A word on currency. Based on our simulation, applying last Friday's exchange rates, you should expect a 2 to 3 point headwind from currency translation for both sales and EBIT. In absolute terms, we'd be looking for sales of roughly 5.8 billion euros at an organic growth rate of, say, 2%, and for an EBIT of approximately 1.16 billion euros if, say, there was no EBIT growth. Over to Helios, where we made our 3 to 5% guidance for organic sales growth last year, and where we'd like to stick to it. 2016 is the seventh consecutive year of us guiding to that range. It had served us well. We have always achieved it. No reason to change it. Given Easter being a Q1 event this year, we may see a slow start. But that then would be nothing to worry about. For EBIT, we expect further progress this year, widespread across the portfolio, but in particular from those hospitals that hadn't been with Rhön for too long before we then acquired them. So a growth rate in the mid to high single digits should take us to an EBIT range of 670 to 700 million euros. Now, for Vamed, after 6% organic sales growth in 2015, record order intake in the fourth quarter, leading to a massive order book, and the increased weight of the more stable service business, we are quite confident to reach 5 to 10% organic growth also this year, despite some of the geopolitical uncertainties and the low oil price potentially resulting in project delays. And on that basis, we'd like to guide yet again also to 5 to 10% EBIT growth for 2016. So for the group on slide 17, I'd like to start with sales growth, where we expect 6 to 8% at constant currency. For the avoidance of doubt, this guidance range does not include meaningful unannounced acquisitions. So the organic growth element should be in the same magnitude as 2015. And as to the currency translation effect, if current exchange rates prevailed until the end of the year, we'd expect a headwind of 1 to 2 percentage points, mainly from the Latin American currencies, but also from the Chinese yuan. At 6% growth, the bottom end of our guidance range, our simulation results in group sales of approximately 28.8 billion euros. And as to net income growth, our full year guidance with 8 to 12% at constant currency comes on the back of the stellar 21% in 2015. So yet again, at least high single, if not double digit growth, despite an extremely tough comp. Based on its guidance and accounting for our just above 30% ownership position, FMC contributes around 4 growth points to our guidance range. So also the rest of the group continues to grow very nicely, above and below the EBIT line. Also here, currency. For net income, we'd expect a headwind of also 1 to 2 percentage points. And at 8%, the bottom end of our guidance range, our simulation results in group earnings of approximately 1.52 billion euros. Now, for good order, this is an operating guidance. Unlike 2015, we do not foresee any below-the-line items. That doesn't mean they could not happen. If something truly one-time in nature were to arise, say, another major legal settlement or a potential impairment charge triggered by even more adverse currency fluctuations in Latin America, that may not be covered by our earnings guidance. No reason to be alarmed, but in the spirit of no surprises, at least no bad ones, I still wanted to bring it up. On the other hand, in the absence of any such larger one-time item, we feel very comfortable with that 8 to 12% earnings guidance. And, as it happens, that range coincides very nicely with the implied CAGRs at the bottom and upper end of our 2019 target. Thank you for now. Mark and I will now be happy to take your questions.
We are now starting the question and answer session. The first question is from Veronika Dubohova with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three, please, if I may. My first one is just a general question on leverage and your views on the M&A environment and the opportunities that you see. Obviously, you are getting to the bottom end of the guidance of the target ratio for your leverage. And I'm just wondering, is the deleveraging a function of you not seeing suitable acquisitions, of you not seeing rightly priced acquisitions? And can you just remind us what is on the priority board for you? And if we were to be having this conversation again in 12 months' time and you are at, you know, less than 2.5 times net debt to EBITDA, what other alternative uses of cash might you consider aside from M&A to maintain the efficiency of the balance sheet? That's my first question, please. My second question is just very quick on the competitive environment in the U.S. injectable generic market. And Mark, I'd love to get your thoughts on what you're seeing on the ground and if you've noticed any changes in the behavior of your competitors. Obviously, Hospira is now under the Pfizer ownership, and it would be great to get your thoughts on that. And my last question is on Helios and the Rhone Clinicum margins. Thank you, Stefan, for the color as to where those assets are performing today. From memory, you are targeting for Rhone to get to that 12 to 15% margin corridor that you have for your mature business. Can you just refresh our memory on what the timeline for that is? Is it the next 12 months, or should we be thinking of that as a 2 to 3 year project? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Veronica. This is Mark. Let me try and hit the first two and then hand it to Stefan on the margin question. Regarding leverage, yes, that has come down a little faster than anticipated, mainly due to our strong cash flow development, and I think that's a positive, and we should see it as such. Going forward, when it comes to uses of capital, I mean, our first priority is, of course, to grow through acquisitions, especially since the industries in all four of our business segments are still consolidating, and as and when we see targets out there that are a good fit, we will move. And so that's priority number one. Having said that, when you look at last year, our acquisition spending level has been a little lower than in typical previous years. I think in hindsight, that turned out to be prudent. I think some of the hot air has left the asset valuation market in healthcare starting from last fall. As and when the right opportunity presents itself, we will pounce. And so we remain interested. I think this growth story, both on an organic and also an M&A level, is going to continue. If no suitable targets come up, I think Stefan made the point in his presentation We are concerned about balance sheet efficiency, and so while I have no specific steps to announce at this time, if we were, you know, on a mid to longer term basis to be below 2.5, we would think about something appropriate to basically get back to our target range of 2.5 to 3. Regarding the competitive environment in the U.S., I have seen no major change. You see the usual ups and downs, you know, as products are being introduced. Sometimes you get some more competition. Sometimes you get less competition. You still have a fairly elevated shortage level, as we said. Still 21 products where Kabi is a supplier concerned by the shortage. And so from that point of view, no significant changes, and certainly no significant changes coming from some of the new ownership that we have seen in this industry. So for us, that's just as well. I think we have enormous continuity in our management team on the ground, and we continue to do well, and we see no particular new negatives coming up.
Veronica, let me remind you what we said at the time of the acquisition of the Rhön hospitals, and we took them over with an EBIT margin of that entire portfolio of 7.5%. And we confirmed at the time that we felt comfortable to take that portfolio as a whole well into our target range of 12 to 15% EBIT margin. I recall that I even said we should be able to take that into the upper half. What we said was that if you worked on the assumption of 2 billion euros of revenue, an uplift to, say, 13.5, i.e. the midpoint of that range, would be 6 points, would be 120 million euros of incremental EBIT. And we subdivided that total EBIT potential into two categories. The near term, that was 85, and Mark, as part of his prepared remarks, confirmed that there, we backed them, and then the balance, and that would accrue to us over time. So the Rhön hospitals now are in the five-year cluster as a whole, but as you are perfectly aware, there are a few of them that only arrived at Rhön shortly before we then acquired them, so they will have a bit to go. So I would in general say that this will be another midterm task to get to the overall synergy number that we had put in front of you. But nonetheless, we still stand by that overall assumption.
That's great. Thank you, Stefan. So just to clarify, that incremental 35 you think comes over the next 2 to 4 years?
Yeah, but in addition to a general further improvement of the underlying portfolio. Yeah, as you've seen, Helios as a whole came in at an 11.5% margin. So also excluding the Rhön hospitals, we have some further upside potential margin, as evidenced by our raised EBIT guidance for 16.
Understood. That's very clear. Thank you both.
Our next question comes from a line of Gunnar Romer with Deutsche Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, everyone. Gunnar Romer, Deutsche Bank. Thanks for taking my question. The first one, just quickly on M&A again, and if you could remind us of the strategic rationale for the acquisition of the business from Becton. Secondly, on Kabi and your guidance, can you provide some EBIT sensitivity to drug shortages? So would it be fair to assume that your EBIT guidance would be probably be in line with your 6 to 10% midterm target in case you had assumed drug shortages to remain stable? And in this context, also, you do assume a gradual easing of drug shortages. I was just wondering whether you can provide us some color as to what that means and so a timeline as to when you would expect drug shortages to come to an end and what your effective visibility is in this regard. Then lastly, on Helios, just a quick one. what kind of EBIT contribution would you expect from the already announced acquisitions in Niedenberg and Die Kolzen? And also maybe a brief word on the financial impact of the so-called Helios Plus cards. I've seen you've signed 5,000 now. I was just wondering how we should be thinking about the financial impact, both near-term, for example, with regard to higher marketing spend, but also longer-term with regard to potentially accelerating organic growth. Thank you.
Gunnar, thanks for your questions. Let me try and hit the Becton Dickinson and Kabi questions first and then hand it to Stefan for the Helios questions. Becton Dickinson, we're quite excited about that transaction because we do believe that there is a longer-term trend towards pre-filled syringes, not only for generic products but for all types of injectable products. They're clearly safer for the caregivers, and they're safer for patients. And so from our perspective, there's a long-term trend underway here. We believe that with this deal, we get access to a top-notch facility that can really jumpstart that business for us. There were a few products already out in the market, and we can now basically work on registering more of our existing products in a pre-filled syringe format. And so over time, again, this is going to be a medium-term kind of thing. This is not a near-term immediate profit contributor, but over the medium term, we believe that this is an exciting, interesting, additional category in the generic IV drug market where we intend to become a leader. We have some experience in that product group in Europe already. I think this now really jumpstarts our business in the U.S., and it also gets us long-term supply of what we believe is the best pre-filled syringe system, and that's Becton Dickinson's system. So we're quite excited about that. On Kabi, I know there's a whole lot of interest here in sensitivity regarding the truck shortages and how and when they might be ramping down. I'm afraid we won't be very much helpful on that, on giving you a number sensitivity. This area is just too difficult to forecast, too many changes that have surprised us over the years. So typically our assumption, just for planning purposes, is when we're saying gradual easing, that with a 1 to 2 year time horizon, the truck shortages would ramp down pretty much in a straight line fashion. If that does not happen again, then it is an upside. But how much exactly that upside is devilishly hard to forecast, and so I'd like to stay away from putting numbers to it, if that's okay.
Gunnar, it's Stefan, and you were asking two sub-questions on Helios. The answer to both of them is not material. On the EBIT contribution from the newly acquired hospitals, I'd say they are going to be small but positive. Niederberg is a profitable hospital, which, however, we will need to completely refurbish. We will have to do that whilst the hospital is in operation, so that may have a negative effect on running earnings, but we'd still expect to keep them positive also going forward. Anyway, it's two relatively small facilities, and in the overall scheme of things, you wouldn't note the effect. As far as the Helios Plus card is concerned, also here, for the time being, I would expect a non-material effect, neither to the positive nor to the negative. On the negative side, yes, we do have some marketing and selling expenses. They are not overly voluminous. On the other hand, with the pickup of additional customers, partners, we're going to see more potential in hospitalizations. However, let me also say the population that we're talking about is typically above average healthy, and therefore we would expect a meaningfully lower average hospitalization rate than for the average of the German population. This, at least in the medium term, I would not put particular emphasis on when it comes to incremental profitability.
Thank you. Maybe just one follow-up with regard to your Helios comments then. When looking at your guidance for 2016 and assuming that there's no material impact from the two points you just touched upon, then I'm still surprised to see that guidance not slightly higher on the EBIT level, because I would have expected that based on your hospital development plan, you should be able to achieve 700 million plus at the midpoint. Now, and that is even more so given a rather favorable reimbursement environment on the one hand, and maybe also some temporary tailwinds from the refugee crisis. Any additional comment from your side in that regard?
You've seen our organic growth rate guidance at 3 to 5%, and we have commented on various occasions that while the headline DRG inflator looks good at around 3%, by no means does all of that end up in our P&L, and there is substantial loss of that 3% along the way. And therefore, by no means should you work on the assumption that the price effect in 2016 is going to be 3%. Relative to the 3 to 5% organic growth guidance for the top line, I would argue that an EBIT growth of 6 to 9%, that is what is implied in that 670 to 700 million euro, is a good relative performance. And it is actually in line with the expectations for our hospital development plan. As far as refugees are concerned, I wouldn't put too much emphasis on this. From what you've seen, from what we have seen, this is a part of the population that also is well above the average healthy. It is typically young males that are coming to us, and therefore we would not work on the basis of the average hospitalization rate, but only a fraction of that. And that is also the experience that we've had so far.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Our next question comes from a line of Tom Jones with Berenberg. Please proceed with your question.
Oh, good afternoon. I had a couple. The first one was just on Kabi's U.S. drug business. It's a little difficult for us to sort of tease out the quality of what's in your pipeline. I know you've made some quantitative comments in the past about there not being much dead wood in the portfolio. I was just wondering if there was anything you might be able to add on that as the land currently lies. The second question was just around Kabi's non-US businesses. We tend to focus a lot on the IV drug business, and then the discussion tends to move to a geographical basis when we get outside North America. I was just wondering if you could give us a little bit more color on what's going on at a business level in infusion solutions, medical devices, and clinical nutrition on a ex-US rather than a regional basis. And then the final question is just on Helios. If I add the additional 35 million of Rhone synergies in to the 15 numbers on a kind of pro forma basis, that very much just gets me to the bottom end of the 12 to 15% target range. Now, knowing the company and knowing you, I think you'll be pretty disappointed if that's all you manage to achieve over the longer term. So maybe you could give us a little bit of color on kind of when you think you might get nearer the mid or upper end of that EBIT range that you've provided, and perhaps, you know, what you might be doing to get there.
Thanks, Tom. Let me start it off with Kabi U.S. and outside of the U.S. Regarding the U.S., sorry to be not much more helpful on this. We're really not doing this to make it hard on you. It's simply that I think it's in the best interest of our shareholders not to disclose too much about our pipeline, and I think that's normal industry practice. So I really have nothing to add to this other than reiterate the number of launches, being towards the high end of our target range for 16 and 17, also making it clear that we have 50-plus products pending with FDA, so there's a good pipeline even after the years 16 and 17. And also, I think we're doing a nice job replenishing that pipeline. Typically we are filing 10-plus products with FDA to replenish our pipeline going forward. But again, in terms of what it is and when and how, I think it's really best to stay away from that. Outside of the U.S., again, one of the big items to watch right now is the development in China, because I think what you're seeing here is an essential change in how the products are being priced. I think there's also positives with that because you remove the risk that one central unit with the stroke of a pen would in the future influence your pricing. You know, as someone who is focused on market-based dynamics and pricing, I think this is more market, and it's also more decentralized pricing model because it'll be province by province. And so that's something we'll follow very closely and update you as the year progresses. I have not seen much competitive change outside of the U.S. when it comes to infusion solutions or medical devices. What you see here for Europe and even the emerging markets is a remarkable picture of stability, and so it's not that you had any short-term significant swings here when it comes to relative market shares or competitive movements. So really, the U.S. generic IV drug business is the fastest-moving part of our business. That's certainly the most volatile one, but it's also one of the higher growth and higher margin parts of our business.
Tom, in addition to the answer that I gave to Veronica, let me point you to the hospital in Wiesbaden that we acquired from Roehn. We call it HSK, as you know. And not only is it among the largest hospitals that we acquired as part of the overall Roehn transaction, it is also a hospital that was very fresh with Roehn and is among the latest that came to us because closing of that particular transaction was a bit delayed. Now, that is a maximum care provider with more than 1,000 beds, but as you probably will have picked up, there we are doing a complete refurbishment of the entire campus. We're building a new hospital whilst we keep that hospital in operation. Now, whilst I would expect HSK to make a larger positive EBIT contribution than last year, in 2016, by no means. Will they have made it into the target range, and only over time I would expect them to gradually make progress here. So that is an additional key reason why I would say we're going to get there, but we're going to get there only in the medium term. Hope that's helpful.
Sure. That gives us some color. Thanks.
Our next question comes from a line of Alex Kleban with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the questions. I just wanted to ask two. Just on the launch pipeline, appreciating you don't want to give too much detail, but for the 50 ANDAs overall that you've talked about in the past, is that for 50 different molecules or 50 different formulations? I just wanted to clarify that. And then on the Becton Dickinson deal, just to get a bit more detail, first, where do you see the opportunities to improve upon what Becton was already doing in prefilled syringes? I mean, my understanding is it's a business that had never fully taken off for them as they'd hoped it would, and just wondering what you're going to plan to do different to what was done in the past. And then the second is the partnership aspect of it on IV solutions, so I guess sort of the care fusion part of the deal. How does that work in practice, and just sort of what are you anticipating operationally in terms of cross-selling or how are you going to approach that that partnership with Becton? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. For the pipeline, the vast majority of that 50 is different molecules. And so we have a very conservative way of counting these different ANDAs. So it's not just different formulations. On Becton Dickinson, I do think this was a new business venture for them, and they were, of course, not in the generic IV drug business proper beforehand. And so I think they, as I perceived it from the outside, they found it hard to scale up the number of products, fill that new facility quickly, and, you know, achieve the economies of scale that are needed to make this a profitable venture. I think this is where our broad portfolio really comes into play, and I think we have a better opportunity to bundle on some of these prefilled syringe products with our existing flip-top vial products and really have a complete portfolio for our clients. And so I think that is the key difference. Now, having said that, it will take us a while. This, again, since every new product needs to be registered, you know, this will take us a while. This is a multi-year undertaking, but it is one where the market is clearly moving with us, and where we believe that overall pre-filled syringes will be in much higher demand in the future than they are now. So we believe this is the right trend to bet on. And regarding the potential cross-selling here with saline, I think this is a nice way for us, you know, to lock in a high-quality partner that clearly was interested now in Fusion Solutions, and really that way have stable demand, which I think is important when it comes to building a U.S. facility for saline. So again, it's all about, you know, a good high-quality mutual relationship, someone that's a long-term player in the market, little to no competitive overlap, and giving us the stability then to basically plan our investment to increase our posture in saline in the U.S.
If I can follow up quickly, is that going to be then exclusive with Becton on saline?
We have not commented on the specific contract details, and so I appreciate we could stay away from that.
Oh, that's right. And timing-wise, can you comment on that, sort of when we could anticipate some financial impact?
Sorry, I didn't get that question.
Oh, sorry, timing-wise, just to understand when we can see impact coming through.
I don't think that, you know, on the saline in itself, I don't think this is a material event for Kabi overall. And then when it comes to the pre-filled syringe side of the deal, we said that it was going to be sort of near-term, mid-term accretive.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, our final question will come from the line of Julian Dormois with Exane. Please proceed with your question.
First one is about the margin for China, because if I remember well, back in 2013, we had a major round of price cuts in China, I think to the tune of high single digit or something like that. And it had a pretty significant impact on your margin in APAC, because I think you lost about 500 bips or something like that on the margin side. Given the self-help that you have done in that business since last year, do you think the margin would be more resilient in case there is a worst-case scenario materializing on this one? And the second question is just a confirmation for Helios that you are still considering going abroad and considering acquisition outside of Germany.
Thanks, Julian. On China, I think the one key difference, no matter what's going to happen here exactly with this tender system, is that it will be a gradual process as opposed to a pretty stiff price cut that went in effect from one day to another. And so this is a gradual process now as these tenders are being rolled out province by province, and our best bet is at this point that this is a 1 to 2 year process. And so, of course, as you see that there may be more price pressure than anticipated, you will react to that and try to adjust your cost base. And if not, you don't have to do it. But, again, you have time to react, and I think that is the key difference to 2013. When it comes to potential magnitude, again, we have some internal assumptions, and as we mentioned, we're a little cautious right now on how we're guiding specifically for 2016. But we're not seeing something on the same level of magnitude as happened in 2013. Regarding Helios, what we did confirm in the fall and over the winter on a few occasions is that, yes, we are scanning the environment internationally for Helios as well. Same wording as last time. That doesn't mean a deal is imminent. It just means, you know, we're basically doing desk research on, you know, what might constitute another interesting country market and other opportunities out there that could be a good fit. And then we'll find appropriate ways to let you know if this is heating up so that we're sparing you a bad surprise one day to another. So, again, we're still studying this. This is still the desk research phase, and we'll see where that goes.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thanks for your attention and joining today's conference call. If there are any more questions, please give us a call. Thanks and goodbye.